Thankful to have the blessed privilege to be with you once again this morning. I hated so much that I was not able to be with you last time. Had an appointment to be here. Fortunately, sickness got in the way, but thankful that I'm able to be here this morning. If you have your Bibles, I'll spend most of the time in the fifth chapter of Mark on an account that's there. But this account is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And I want to actually begin in Luke because I want to get a couple of things at the beginning of this to sort of set a background. So in the eighth chapter of Luke, we have Jesus had been to the country of the Gadarenes. And while he was here in the country of the Gadarenes, he came across a man that was possessed of many devils. And when the Lord asked his name, he said, "We are legion, for we are many." And Jesus expelled those devils into the swine. They ran off the cliff. I want to get to the 37th verse and begin there. "Then the whole multitude of the country of the Gadarenes round about besought him to depart from them, for they were taken with great fear, and he went up into the ship and returned back again." So we see the reaction to that country of the Gadarenes. So they had seen what he had done, that he had rid this man of these demons that possessed him. And instead of recognizing the glory and the miracle which he performed, they wanted him gone. They besought that he would leave. They wanted to kick him out. And so he got on the ship and left. "Now the man out of whom the devils were departed besought him that he might be with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, 'Return to thine own house and show how great things God hath done unto thee.' And he went his way and published it throughout the whole city, how great things Jesus had done unto him. And it came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him." So we have a contrast of what he left, the country of the Gadarenes, and he returns, and the people are gladly receiving him. And they were waiting on him. So that was a couple of things I wanted to get as a background as we go to the fifth chapter of Mark. And realize that there was a crowd of people who had been waiting. They had been waiting for Jesus to return. They knew what he had done. They knew the miracles that he had performed. And they were anxiously awaiting and glad to receive him. So that's sort of the atmosphere that he's coming back into. And then as we go through, we will see two different accounts that are interwoven within each other. And we want to spend time this morning, Lord being our helper, looking at these accounts and what we can learn from them. So if we go now to the fifth chapter, and we'll pick up in the 21st verse. "And when Jesus was passed over again by the ship into the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet." So this is the first individual we're going to look at, the man by the name of Jairus. And it tells us that he is a ruler of the synagogue. So he is a Jew, that it's a ruler of the synagogue. So he had some bit of authority, and he would likely, his job was tending to the synagogue, tending to the grounds, tending to the building, taking care of what needed to be taken care of, and the people would have known him. He would have had some bit of recognition or prominence among the people, being a ruler of the synagogue, and he's coming. So obviously he's among the people that had been waiting for Jesus. And he came and he fell at his feet. And we're going to see what he is asking, he besought him greatly, saying, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live." We see Jairus in a desperate place. He had his little daughter, his little girl, who was on her deathbed. And he was desperately trying to find a solution. And so he was waiting for Jesus. He was waiting so he could beseech him to come back to his home. That if he was there, if he was there with his daughter, if he could lay thy hands on her, she may be healed. This is a father doing anything he can to save his little girl. And see, even the words he used, "my little daughter," it's words of affection. It's not my kid or something. It's my little daughter. So he is desperate and hoping that Jesus could save her. And now he's there. He had been gone, but now he's back and he has a chance. If you could just come home and lay thy hands. Now this is a little bit different. We remember there was a Roman centurion. In this case, this was a Jewish ruler. But we remember the Roman centurion that had a servant that was at the point of death. And he besought Jesus to come with him. But before they got there, he didn't find himself worthy that Jesus stepped foot in his household. If he could just say the words, he could be healed. So that Roman centurion had a different measure of faith. Jairus, I believe, had faith. But the Roman centurion had a different measure. So we have a little bit of a difference there. Roman centurion believed that he could just say it and it would happen, but the Jewish ruler believed he had to lay hands on him. But he found him. He got him. Now he has some hope. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. Okay, so let's try to get this picture in our mind. This is not a handful of people waiting on the banks of the sea. This is, as it says, a multitude gladly receiving him and waiting on him. They are there for one reason, and that's to see Jesus.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they're there. And so as he's going with Jairus, they're thronging him. They're pushing up. They're wanting to get close. They're wanting to catch a glimpse. They're wanting to be near him. So they're having to make their way through. I don't imagine there's just a clear path. They're having to push through the crowd to get to Jairus' home. Now, who knows what's going through Jairus' mind here? He's wanting people to get out of the way. I got important things to do. And the people are thronging him. And then in the midst of this multitude, this vast number of people, and let's remember the kind of crowds that followed Jesus. Remember when he fed the 5,000 beside women and children. Those are the kinds of multitudes that followed after him. There's a multitude there, but in the midst of that multitude, 25th verse says, a certain woman. Now, we don't get her name. We know Jairus is a ruler. And this is a certain woman. Now, I like that it says certain, too.
Yeah.
It doesn't just say a woman. It's a certain woman. A specific woman. Yeah. A special woman. A certain woman. Which had an issue of blood 12 years. That is a long time. Now, today there's different issues of blood that we could have. There's all kinds of blood-related diseases and ailments. So it's not giving specifically what it is. We can infer some certain things, but it's an issue of blood. This was a serious thing under the Levitical Mosaic law that was given. So let's back up to that law to get a little bit of what that meant. And that's the 15th chapter of Leviticus, where it talks about issues of blood. It talks about men with issues of blood. It talks about women with issue of blood. It talks about a woman with an issue of blood and shall be apart 7 days. But we want to skip on down to something that's a little bit more applicable to the certain woman. That's the 25th verse. And if a woman have an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation, and she shall be unclean. Every bed wherein she lieth all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her separation. Whatsoever she sitteth upon shall be unclean, as the uncleanness of her separation. And whosoever toucheth those things shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. So, anything she wore, anything she sat upon, anything she laid upon, anybody that touched her were unclean. This means that she was a pariah. She was an outcast for 12 years. If she had a husband before, she wouldn't have been allowed to be with him. She would have been separate. She couldn't have been with family. She would have been separate. She couldn't be around other people. She would have to be separate. Other people couldn't touch her. It was maybe not quite to the degree, but similar to leprosy, in that she was unclean. So she wouldn't have had someone give her a hug. Couldn't happen. She was unclean. 12 years. And had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. So not only was she that outcast, she had been searching for answers for 12 years. She had went to many physicians. She had spent every dime that she had looking for an answer, looking for a cure. Not only did she not get better, she got worse. Have you ever experienced something like that, where you go to a doctor looking for an answer and they can't tell you anything? Let's run some tests, and the tests come back and like, well, wasn't what we thought. My wife, I'll say this since she's not here. My wife has a few different chronic ailments that she has to deal with. And she's been to doctor after doctor after doctor and gets very few answers. I think recently maybe we found an answer, but we're hoping and praying. I tell you, she gets frustrated. She gets really frustrated by it, because she just feels worse and worse and worse. But I see how the Lord has blessed so greatly. We have two wonderful kids, and they love their mom, and they can cuddle up next to her and give her hugs and do things to help her, and I do what I can. Now I think of this woman who had been through doctor after doctor after doctor and spent everything she had, and she had nobody to give her comfort. She had nobody to give her a hug, to do stuff for, because she was unclean. She is desperate. She is at the end of her rope. Tried everything. I don't have any resources to try anymore. It's a certain woman. And when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. Now, there's nothing in the law or anything that would say just by touching that you'd be healed. But that's what she believed. There's a multitude of people. There's a throng around that's pressing on Jesus, and she is trying to sneak through it. She's not supposed to be there. She's not supposed to be touching these people. She's violating the law. But she's desperate, and she believes that if she can just touch his garments, that she can be healed. I believe it's Matthew, when we read the account, it says, but touch the hem of his garment. We can, let's go to Numbers, the 15th chapter of Numbers. I want to point out something about the hem of the garment that would have been worn. Numbers 15, 27. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speaking to the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations. And they put a fringe on the borders, a ribbon of blue. So you got a blue fringe on the border. It shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them. And that ye seek not after your own heart, your own eyes, after which ye used to go whoring, that ye may remember and do all the commandments and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. So they would have that ribbon of blue on the hem of the garment, right around the border, right where she would have touched. And the purpose of it is that you looked upon it and you remembered God. You remembered His commandments. You remembered the God that delivered His people from bondage. So maybe that played into it, but this was also something that had been perverted a bit by the Pharisees. The Pharisees were the type that they really like to make themselves look good. That's really what they cared about. And it was one of the things that we see Jesus rebuke very harshly is hypocrisy. Well, let's turn quickly to the 23rd chapter of Matthew. And if you've ever heard someone say that when Jesus was here, he just loved everybody and said, love everybody, and he never got angry or anything like that. Read the 23rd chapter of Matthew, and you can see what he says to the Pharisees. He was not happy with them. He wasn't saying, just as long as you're happy. What he says, in the first verse, then spake Jesus to the multitude, to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, all therefore whosoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. Hypocrites. Do as I say, not as I do. That was the Pharisees, but even what they said was wrong a lot of the time. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Fifth verse. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garments. Those blue borders. They would make, it wasn't just the fringe, they would make them big. They would make them prominent. Why? Was it the purpose? You look upon them and you think on God and His commandments? No. Look how great I am because look how large my border is. They had completely perverted things. The Pharisees cared about what they looked like. In contrast, you have a certain woman with an issue of blood. And her desire was to not be seen. She came secretly, in private, and wanted to just touch that border, that hem of the garment, to touch his garment, believing that she would be healed. The doctors couldn't do it, but just touching that garment could do it. She displayed more faith than the Pharisees by enlarging their border. She was thinking on the power of God, desiring to come privately. And what happens? 30th verse. Or back up, 29th verse. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Just like that. Straightway, she touched the garment. Straightway, she was healed. She felt in her body. Maybe it's not an issue of blood, but do you have any aches and pains? Any joint pains or anything? Can you imagine if it was gone? Would you know straightway? Yeah, of course you would. Something's different. Something feels different. She knew right away that she was healed. I may have said this before, but one of the things I love is looking at the immediacy of how God works. And what I love about this chapter is it shows the timing of how God works. When God purposes to do something, it's done. But He might not purpose to do it right away. Straightway, she's healed. The account I always think of is when Jesus is walking on the water and when He steps onto that boat. When He finally steps, it says immediately they were on dry ground. They were 3.5 miles out in the middle of the sea, and He stepped and they were immediately on dry ground. That's how God works. My grandmother passed a couple years ago. She grew up Methodist all her life. And after my grandfather passed away, she wanted to talk to me. And I was honestly a little bit surprised at her question. She said, "I believe He's in heaven, but what happened when He died?" What happened? Did something happen in between? She didn't know. She'd been going all her life and she never heard. Well, I told her about the thief on the cross. And Jesus told that thief, "This day I shall be in paradise. I told her in Corinthians how it tells us to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. It doesn't say after a while. Immediately. So I told her, from what the Bible tells me, what I firmly believe, is when you close your eyes in death in this world, you are immediately with God. That's how He works. Straightway, she felt the fountain of blood dry up. Immediately.
Yeah.
Something else happened immediately. Jesus immediately, knowing in Himself that virtue had gone out of Him, turned Him about in the press and said, "Who touched my clothes?" A couple of points here. Does this mean that Jesus was less virtuous after this happened? God forbid. That's not what it's saying at all. Do you think God didn't know that woman was there? You think Jesus was surprised it happened? No, He wasn't. He knew. So why did He say, "Who touched me?" Did He not know? He knew. Why did He say it? So that others would know. Why would that matter? I'll give you a couple of reasons. One, shows the power, shows yet another example of His might. But I think even more importantly in this moment, it's so others would know that she was clean. If we went on reading about in Leviticus, after they were cleansed, they'd have to go and be declared clean. They'd have to go 7 days. It was a whole process. He is declaring to everyone in the multitude, this woman is clean. What I have clean, call thou not unclean. She was clean. So He says, "Who touched my garment? Who touched my clothes?" There is a throng of people. So the disciples said probably what we would have said in this case. His disciples said unto Him, "Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest, who touched me?" Everybody's touching you. That's all they're doing is touching you. What are you talking about? Everybody is. And you're saying, "Who touched me?" It's because one of them was different.
Yep.
One was different, and it was a certain woman.
Yes, it was.
And He looked round about to see her that had done this thing. I'll read the next verse then. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before Him and told Him all the truth. Was she supposed to be in that crowd? No, she was not. She's supposed to be outside. Was she supposed to touch Him? No. She wasn't supposed to touch anything. Nobody was supposed to touch her. And she had just been found out. She is fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, knowing what she had done. She's afraid that she had been caught, and she had been called out for it. You can't hide from God.
No.
We can't find a place that He can't see. You can't tell little white lies to God. He knows all. We are commanded to confess our sins. It's not because He doesn't already know it. But she told Him all the truth. Remember Pontius Pilate, when he's questioning Jesus, he asks the question to himself and then walks away. What is truth? Mm-hmm. The truth was right there before him. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He is truth. She told him all the truth. You know what we should do when we go to God? Tell him all the truth.
Yeah.
If you're confessing your sins, don't try to sugarcoat it to God. Tell him all the truth.
Yeah.
If you need something, if you're going to him in prayer, tell him all the truth. We are nothing without God. We need to know that truth.
Yeah.
We need to tell him all the truth because he already knows. She had been caught. She didn't try to find an excuse. She didn't try to deny. She told him all the truth. And so, fearing and trembling, that may have been how she had been the whole time, seeking to do this thing, hearing that Jesus was there, wanting to come and just touch his clothes. She knew it was a risk, and now she's been caught. She's fearing, she's trembling. So what does Jesus do? The first thing he says, he said unto her, "Daughter." That's the first thing he said.
Yep.
You don't find, now, we are sons and daughters of God. You don't find this particular expression where he calls someone daughter, but here. With a certain woman. Why? To give her comfort. To let her know it's okay. Children, when they're afraid or something's bothering them and they come to their parents, what do you want to do? You want to give them comfort. You want to let them know, it's okay. Don't be afraid. I'm here. I got you. That's what he did. Daughter. Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Wasn't touching the garment. That's not what did it. It was the faith.
Yep.
It was the faith that made her whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. 12 years, all the money she had, all the physicians, and she just got worse and worse. But thy faith hath made thee whole.
Yeah.
And that one experience, she was healed. Go in peace. When do you think the last time she had peace was? Say it had been at least 12 years. Go in peace. See the love that he has. It's one thing you do see. He'll rebuke hypocrisy. He'll chasten his children. But oh, he'll give compassion and kindness. Do we remember the woman whose son had died? She was a widow woman. Only one she had left in the world was her son who had died, and he was in that fire. And she was grieving. And Jesus touched the fire and he arose. He had compassion on her. Now, it had been better for the son to be in heaven in immortal glory. He had compassion on her. You see the compassion time and time again, the kindness, the love that God has. And here, He's showing love for a certain woman. I tell you, brothers and sisters, you're not just somebody. You're a certain people. You're a special people. You are a chosen people.
Yes.
So, have this woman. She had just been healed. But what was happening before? Jairus. He was worried about his daughter. I kind of tend to think that was another reason daughter was said. Because Jesus was thinking on his daughter as well. Maybe make Jairus think upon the daughter that was there. But his thoughts were primarily on his little girl. And he had finally, after waiting, Jesus came. And he has him. We're on the way. I got a chance. There's some hope. And then all this happens and it interrupts everything. It's an interruption. And then, okay, she's healed. All right, let's get back to it. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" The news he had been dreading, the news he had been trying to avoid, had happened. His daughter had died. What could have been going through Jairus' mind at that moment? If he had just come back a little bit sooner, if we hadn't been interrupted, if we just made it there. But it was too late. But then Jesus immediately says something. As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, "Be not afraid, only believe." He had seen this display of faith from this woman. And Jesus said, "Thy faith had made thee whole." Now he says, "Be not afraid, only believe." So, they keep going. But the multitude can't follow. He suffered no man to follow him save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and seeth the tumult and them that wept and wailed greatly. All right, I need to take a moment on this. So you see, the tumult, it's a big to-do. There's a lot going on. Weeping and wailing greatly. So think, a lot of people must have been really upset about Jairus' daughter. That's not why the tumult was there. In this time, the culture, the Jewish culture, they had people that were hired mourners. So especially if you had someone of significance, they would hire mourners to show how great the loss and the grief was. I've read that even families that were of lower estate, lower means, were still required to at least have two flute players and one wailing woman. It was a requirement. So there's a tumult. There's all this weeping and wailing, but it's primarily a show. It's primarily just put on to fake showing grief. There were those that were grieving there, but a lot of them were just putting on a show. So, I give that context so the next couple of verses make a little bit more sense. When he was come in, he saith unto them, why make ye this ado and weep? Why make it a big show? So, if it was not the case, and it was family members, and he said, why make ye ado? See, that seems harsh. He's talking to the hired mourners. Why make ye this ado and weep? Then he says, the damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. Does that sound like people that were really grieving? Now to Jairus, did he believe that? Did he not believe that? I believe he wanted to believe that. Now he's holding on to that hope, and there's people laughing. This crazy guy doesn't know what he's talking about. They laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. So those people that are fake mourners, they're out. And in an intimate, private setting, you have Jesus, Peter, James, John, mother, the father, the daughter. And that's all that was in the room. And he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha kumi, which is being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. I believe it's Luke's that says her spirit came into her again. So she had died a physical death. That's not a barrier for Jesus. But he says, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway, immediately, she arose and walked. She was on her deathbed. She was bedridden. And she immediately arose and walked. Now, I don't know what she had, what she had been through, what she had gone through, what disease or ailment it was. But I bet it had been a while since she had walked, being on her deathbed. And she didn't slowly come to groggy as if you're coming out of anesthesia or something. No, she was immediately alert and walked. I don't think she stumbled one bit. She walked. Straightway. She walked. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it. Keep it a secret. Keep it private. And then this last statement's one of my favorite. And he commanded that something should be given her to eat. When was the last time she ate? Who knows? She walked and he commanded, give her something to eat. Again, showing that kindness and compassion. where he's going to care for even the smallest needs that we might not even think of that time. He knows and he cares. And so we have these two accounts. We have a young daughter and a certain woman that's also a daughter. I want to look at, now that we've gone through, let's do a little bit of a comparison here. For 12 years, a certain woman had suffered with an issue of blood. Mm-hmm. Tried everything she could, none better, but only grew worse. And this little girl was 12 years old. For 12 years, Jairus had his daughter. And he feared that was ending. We have 12 years of joy and 12 years of despair. We have the woman. Pariah is, if she was of a higher class before, she's definitely not now. In fact, she doesn't have any money left. She's of a low estate in this world. And we have a ruler of the synagogue, one who's of a higher estate, one that probably has money, that probably could afford the physicians, but they couldn't do anything. Jesus heals them both. The Bible tells us God is not a respecter of persons. Of the rich, poor, doesn't matter to him. Jairus didn't take the front of the line because of who he was. In fact, there was an interruption, wasn't there? But I don't think, I call this a divine interruption. God can work in the interruptions. I remember a man named Moses, which was just trying to tend to some sheep, and all of a sudden there was a voice coming from a burning bush, and he was interrupted. Mm-hmm. And it worked out pretty good. But it didn't matter that Jairus was the ruler, this woman was not. To God, they were both daughters. Jairus came in a very public way. People knew Jairus, and here he comes in the middle of the crowd, throwing himself down at Jesus' feet. We have the woman that comes very privately, very secretly. Doesn't want to be seen. Prayers, we should not be ashamed of declaring the name of God publicly. Yeah, I've told my kids, you know, that they notice that I say Lord willing a lot. I said, why? I said, because the Bible tells me to. Say that I will go into such and such city, but if the Lord wills, it's recognizing that I'm in the hands of God. That I'm not guaranteed another moment, but God is in control. And no matter what happens here, may God's will be done, and I know I have a home secured in heaven. If you're out in public, don't be afraid to bow your head and say, ask the Lord to bless the food that you're about to partake of.
Right.
Don't be afraid to do it.
Amen.
God answers those public prayers. We have a public prayer, the beginning of service and the benediction prayer at the end. Praying publicly, the Lord answers those public prayers. Mm-hmm. Now don't make a show of it as the Pharisees did, but he'll answer it.
Yes, he will.
And you have the woman that comes secretly, privately, hoping and praying that she can but touch his clothes. And you know what? He answers it.
Yeah.
He answers prayers that are made in private. Let's go to the 6th chapter of Matthew. 16th verse tells us, "Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward." So again, not making the public show. If in that case, if you're fasting, no one's any wiser. Don't go, "Oh man, I'm so hungry," and distort your face so everyone goes, "What's up with that guy? He must be fasting. Wow, look at his face." It's not about us. "But thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly."
Yeah.
Pray to him in secret, he'll reward you openly.
Yep.
So what happens here? This woman comes very secretly, very privately, and he calls her out so that the entire multitude that are fixated on Christ see what he's doing. See this woman. See this woman bowing and telling all the truth. You know who heard it? Everybody did. She came to him secretly. He blessed her very publicly. Lord will bless in a public, open way. Jairus comes very publicly, but how does he answer his prayer? Everybody get out, except for Peter, James, John, the mother, the father, and the girl. And he heals her, resurrects her, and charges them that they tell no man. He came publicly, and Jesus answered it privately. What I love about these two accounts that are interwoven so beautifully is we see that God is not handcuffed or restricted in the way that he acts. He knows your needs. He will answer your needs publicly, privately. Come to him publicly, privately. But what we see consistently is the love that he has for his children. The love that he is showing that certain woman and Jairus' daughter. And that's how God responds. Don't limit God in your own mind. Now, you're not going to limit God, but don't restrict him in your own mind. What do I mean by that? If we ever say or think, or maybe subconsciously think, "I don't want to bother him with that," or "that's, I got myself into the mess," or "I'm just too embarrassed to even think it, much less say it out loud," we should tell God all the truth and understand that he loves you. We are all sinners. We are all totally depraved, which means we can do nothing on our own. Dead in trespasses and in sin, and there's not a thing that we could do to change that. But God.
Amen.
We know that Jesus came and he did finish the work that he was sent to do. We know that he did lay down his life for all that the Father gave him, not losing one. There, Satan can't touch your salvation, but you can't touch it either, okay? And in eternal sense, no one can take us from the love of God. So if he loves us and did that, what makes us think that he doesn't care or doesn't listen? Go to him. We see the amazing love, the amazing acts of Jesus here. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. So, whether it's public faith, private faith, trust in our Lord, go to Him for all that you need, and He is so gracious and merciful to us to hear your prayers, to listen to your prayers as sweet incense. Don't be like the Laodiceans that are lukewarm. He spews out of the mouth and says, I were that you were hot or cold. Let's be hot. I trust in Him. There's a lot of trouble in the world, but know that there's one that you can go to for every bit of it, and He will hear you, and He will answer the prayers, whether it's immediately or whether it's something that in our mind seems to be an interruption. He will answer them. May the Lord bless you.